Susanna had an idea that Mia's problems were a lot more basic, although her kidnapper clearly knew numbers. Susanna didn't think the chap's mother could read at all. Susanna came forward, but not all the way. For a moment she was looking through two sets of eyes at two signs, the sensation so peculiar that it made her feel nauseated. Then the images came together and she could read the message. This safe is provided for your personal belongings. The management of the Plaza Park Hyatt assumes no responsibility for items left here. Cash and jewelry should be deposited in the hotel safe downstairs. To set code, punch in four numbers plus enter. To open, enter your four-number code and push open. Susanna retired and let Mia select four numbers. They turned out to be a 1 and 3 nines. It was the current year and might be one of the first combinations a room burglar would try, but at least it wasn't quite the room number itself. Besides, they were the right numbers, numbers of power, a sigil. They both knew it. Mia tried the safe after programming it, found it locked tightly, then followed the directions for opening it. There was a whirring noise from somewhere inside, and the door popped ajar. She put in the faded red Midtown Lanes bag, the box inside just fit on the shelf, and then the bag of Oriza plates. She closed and locked the safe's door again, tried the handle, found it tight, and nodded. The boarder's bag was still on the bed. She took the wad of cash out of it and tucked it into the right front pocket of her jeans, along with the turtle. "Have to get a clean shirt," Susanna reminded her unwelcome guest. Mia, daughter of none, made no reply. She clearly cared bupkis for shirts, clean or dirty. Mia was looking at the telephone. For the time being, with her labor on hold, the phone was all she cared about. "Now we palaver," Susanna said. "You promised, and it's a promise you're going to keep. But not in that banquet room." She shuddered. "Somewhere outside, hear me, I beg. I want fresh air. That banqueting hall smelled of death." Mia didn't argue. Susanna got a vague sense of the other woman riffling through various files of memory, examining, rejecting, and at last finding something that would serve. "How do we go there?" Mia asked indifferently. The black woman, who was now two women again, sat on one of the beds and folded her hands in her lap. "Like on a sled," the woman's Susanna part said. "I'll push, you steer, and remember, Susanna Mio, if you want my cooperation, you give me some straight answers."
"I will," the other replied. "Just don't expect to like them, or even understand them."
"What do you—"
"Never mind. Gods, I never met anyone who could ask so many questions. Time is short. When the telephone rings, our palaver ends, so if you'd palaver at all—"
Susanna didn't bother giving her a chance to finish. She closed her eyes and let herself fall back. No bed stopped that fall. She went right through it. She was falling for real, falling through space. She could hear the jangle of the Todas chimes, dim and far.
"Here I go again," she thought. "And, Eddie, I love you."
Stave. "Kamala Jin Jive, ain't it grand to be alive? To look out on Discordia when the demon moon arrives."
Response. "Kamala come five, even when the shadows rise. To see the world and walk the world makes you glad to be alive."